CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com and radio unscripted, and this morning without a doubt most definitely uncensored. Yes, of course I can hear you. Wait for the music to finish.
Well, after the wedding yesterday I can't hear anything, so I'm very sorry about that.
Well, as long as you had a good time. Good, but of course we can hear you. Good morning, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I can't wait to come back on Sunday. I missed you so much.
Me too. I was thinking there's just so much I want to talk to you about and tell you, and I really have missed you, and I've missed you being here on Fridays very, very much indeed.
Thank you so, so much.
And it's cool to hear your voice.
Thank you.
So we have a whole lot of really interesting people in the studio this morning. Bruce is here.
Hello.
And Conrad Feldman, master piercer and body modifier, is with us, which is really cool to have you back again, Conrad.
Thank you so much.
And Shayna, you have to introduce yourself.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, now you've got to talk really close there.
Morning, morning, morning.
That's
I'm Shayna.
Better. Yes.
It is so nice to be here with you guys all over again.
Cool. So Shayna's here for two reasons. The first is because I think that you're fantastic and you've got something to contribute.
Thank you.
And the other is this awesome body jewelry stuff that you guys have done, which I thought, besides for what we're doing in the theater, was the single best thing at Sexpo.
Thank you. We're so excited. Drizzle Jewelry, so, truly something,
yeah,
so different.
It's really cool. So first is Dirty Dictionary time.
Ninja sex, chocolate starfish, Twitter bag, and the GM.
Today's Dirty Dictionary word is...
Unoterpsia.
Dirty Dictionary word.
Unoterpsia. Tamar, any clues?
Please, beyond my understandings, beyond who I am, beyond.
Okay, well, you'll really like the definition of it, so we will get to that a bit later. Brucey, any idea?
Unoterpsia. I think if you've been masturbating using acrylic paint as lubricant and then need to use turpentine to remove it, that's what comes to mind.
That's very, very good. Conrad, any clue?
Not a clue. I was thinking the same thing, turpentine.
Yeah. Okay, you are so far off the mark. Shayna, any idea?
Surprisingly, I had the exact same thought. I'm like, something to do with terps and like maybe like some sensation that you get when you use the terps. So no clue beyond
me. Okay, so you guys are all so far away. So far away. Can you raise Shayna a little bit, please? Because that's quite soft. That'll be a bit better. Mm. Cool.
And she has an amazing voice.
She does.
Thank you.
You should see the rest of her.
Well, I used to
sing. Why don't you take a picture and send me? Yeah.
We will do that. Okay, so I'm going to give Bruce.
And then I can tweet it for the rest of the world, yeah.
So I'm going to give Bruce my phone, and he can take a picture, and then he can WhatsApp it to you. Okay. There you go.
Cool, Bruce. And I will tweet it forward, Shane, if it's okay.
That's absolute it, because the rest of her, I have to tell you, is pretty sensational. So
are we just looking at flesh now? Is that what we're doing? Are we just, you know, pieces of meat? Yes.
Okay. Well, that's what this morning is about in a way, because kind of bodies have become pieces of meat to be decorated and adorned and changed and modified and all sorts of interesting things, which is, you know, it's very ancient stuff. It's not new. And we tend to kind of forget that because we get lost in everything's new. But it's not, Conrad.
No, not at all.
It's very ancient, tribal.
It's been with the human race since the human race has been around.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, the body is our first sort of canvas of expression. from the time you're a little child, you give a child a crayon, first thing they do is they try and write on their own skin. So, I mean, it's so ingrained in who we are as people.
Mm.
And, you know, people are either trying to express things with their body or on their body, or, you know, it's always going to be a part of the human race, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, so the way we do it's changed, and the materials that we use have changed.
Yes.
But essentially, we've been doing this forever.
Forever. I mean, there's always been some sort of rites of passage attached to it. Mm. It teaches you a lot of things as well. It teaches you patience, because it takes time for body piercings to heal, or tattoos, or anything like that.
Mm.
It teaches you how much pain you can handle. You know, the more you experience in life as far as pain and that, the easier your decisions become when it comes down to things that you fear. So it makes you stronger as a person. And that's why a lot of, I suppose, tribes and that use it as a rite of passage into adulthood.
Yeah. So the reasons people do this is actually quite fascinating and quite widespread as well.
It's very widespread. Oh. There's so many different reasons. And it's also individual reasons. Mm. I mean, you may have a reason that nobody else has, but it doesn't matter because it's your reason.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to a guy about it, actually, about a week ago, a friend of mine, and he was saying how, for him, it just helps him to remember what it is to feel, because he has a bad habit of disassociating himself, and he's one of those people who his defense mechanism is to go numb. Mm. So he says he just doesn't feel emotionally, physically, everything. So what he does is he will play with elements of pain and pleasure to come back to feeling.
Mm. Yeah, it reminds him that he's still human.
Exactly.
And still alive, actually.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, look, especially in our country, as you were saying, tribally, I mean, I think Africa's really just such an amazing base where that is applicable, you know. I mean, I know Ethiopians and all sorts of tribes do that as a form of identification. And then people like us these days, we do it to like identify ourselves or stand out or remind us of somebody. It's some symbolic meaning I think we carry with us somewhere. Yeah.
But the standout thing I have an issue with, because what happens is so many people end up doing exactly the same thing as everybody else. So, you know, in the beginning you might do it because you think that you're standing out, but you're actually doing the same thing in the same way as everybody else. And there's nothing really kind of, and a lot of that's to be part of a tribe or to be connected.
Mm.
To communicate with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, because it's definite recognition of certain symbols.
Yeah, it's not so much about what you're doing; it's about how it's affecting you for the better, to put it that way.
Yeah,
I think it can also be something that you do to actually fit in. I mean, I got my first tattoo when I was in Madame Zingara, and it was because everyone around me was covered in tattoos, and I felt like the freak because I didn't have anything.
Mm.
So I just I wanted to have that sort of carny community feel, and so I went out and got my first tattoo as a sort of message to myself. You know, I do sort of belong with these outcasts.
Mm. Yeah, the people.
Yeah.
There was a fascinating movie about that. It was a guy who had lost his memory, or was losing his memory, and he tattooed his whole life story on his body.
Yes, I think it's called Memento.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it was a fascinating story, and that was how he remembered who he was, who the people in his life were.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
I think a lot of people do that, you know, in terms of tattoos, especially people that aren't like regular tattoo, you know, just something that's of design. The first tattoos are usually based, you know, somebody's passed away, or it's some kind of like you're trying to remember something or some special moment in your life, and you put that on your body, and it's like, anytime you look at it, you're like, oh, I remember that.
Mm.
That was important. That meant something to me. And that's, you know, a symbol.
I think from a spiritual perspective as well, I mean, for myself, I'd read about that this Japanese guy, and I think something Yamamoto, he's now recently passed away. And he would put labels on jars of water and then take photographs under electron microscope of how... And the labels would be like love or war. And then it was amazing to see what the molecule...
Dr. Imoto, his work is phenomenal.
So that was my thinking, was that... Mm. So I had the word love tattooed on my wrist where I know that all the blood in my body runs through that particular part of my body every so many hours. So I wanted to see how... And it really does feel like it changed my life. Mm. I do feel like I resonate more with love than I did before the tattoo. So
it's ironic that you say that. Sorry, because I've also on my right hand, I've got it in Arabic. Actually, it's a symbol and it's love. It's actually my recent one. So you've got
snap.
We've got two people in the studio with love on their wrists. So there you go. You were saying how, yeah, although it's, you know, so people end up with similar stuff, it's a little bit different. I think yours and I. But I actually put this one here because I just wanted to remind myself that, you know, instead of always running or, you know, being motivated by fear, it's best to be motivated by love. Why on my wrist? Like you say, that's where I think your main veins and your blood run.
I call them my crib notes as well, because on the other wrist I've got create. Okay. So my crib notes are create love. So when I shake someone's hand or I reach out to do something, or my crib notes to myself on a subconscious level are create love. That's what I'm here to
That's
do.
That's amazing. Well, I'll make sure I don't get that on the same side. That so we're not too identical.
You can. Oh, you're more than welcome.
That's like this cool story, you know, if people are going to get these Chinese symbols and often they have nothing to do with what they want it to mean.
Yeah. It actually means douchebag. Or
The funny thing is that most of us who work in the actual body art industry, if you have to ask us our stories of our tattoos, a lot of the time there is no story behind it. Mm-hmm. I mean, people often ask me about the line down my chin, and I'm like, it actually has no meaning. I just thought it would
look cool.
You know what I mean? There's absolutely no meaning to this line.
Yeah.
You know, it was a bit of a compromise between my wife and I. Mm-hmm. Originally, when I met her, I wanted half my face tattooed, you know, in a sort of Moko Maori sort of traditional tattoo. And she was like, you know, that's not a good idea, because, you know, you're going to be dealing with people on a daily basis, and you're not only going to be dealing with people from this industry, you're going to be dealing with people, you know, from all walks of life.
Absolutely.
So, you know, she said it's not really a good idea for you to now stunt your growth as a body artist just because you feel it's right to have half your face tattooed. So it was kind of like my little compromise. I was like, okay, one line on my chin, and that line kind of went further down my neck. So, and you know what? At the end of the day, it was the right decision. It felt right. You know, I was always very iffy about the half a face tattoo type of a thing. And I mean, it's brought me good reviews, because people say it's understated and yet it's there.
But that's what I love about people like you, is that, you know, you'll look at something and you just like it. And it's like, okay, cool, let's do it. Whereas I find someone like me, or, you know, sort of more conventional, conservative, like, okay, cool, I'm all for tattoos. I have 5. But I'm so specific. Like, okay, cool, am I going to like it forever? Does it mean something? Mm-hmm. And there's tons of things that I see. Like, I mean, I've always thought, okay, no, to have my full back done and like these beautiful wings. I think, okay, well, that's great. But, you know, so we always overthink it. So
I think a lot of people overthink it.
Yeah.
You know, for me personally, you know, if I see something, I like it, I put it on, I make my peace with it. Mm-hmm. It's there now. You know, yeah. I'm not going to let, even if I do regret it in that moment, I'm not going to let that regret, you know, overshadow my life. You know what I mean? It's there. It's a part of my experience as a human being.
And that's all. So.
And the funny thing is, I've never regretted any. I've also got 5 tattoos, and I've only ever, I think I had a dream once that I was in the shower and one of my tattoos was washing off. And I remember this indignation. Like, what the hell? Is this like Dove soap? What the hell? You know? So that's the only anxiety I've ever associated with. And one of my tattoos is super dodgy. I went and made the fatal error of going for a very cheap tattoo. Oh, yeah. The guy shook. He was either an alcoholic or a drug addict, or I don't know what his story is. And a friend of mine was sitting watching the whole procedure. I put her off having tattoos for life. She was like, I'll never. And I kind of love it, because the word that I had tattooed is create. And you can see it's as wobbly and as dodgy as hell.
But it's unique. But
it's unique.
Even though it's not.
And that's what creation is. Well, that's what creating things is. So symbolically, it made sense. And then alternative, and the other is the word love was done by this incredibly gifted tattoo artist named Emmanuel in Cape Town. And it's like a work of art. It's the neatest, most precise thing. So I've got create is all like mushy and dodgy, and love is beautiful.
So in the same that's category as a wobbly proctologist.
Look, I wouldn't mess with that stuff. Yeah, that's dodgy. Hey? Yeah. So don't go cheap unless you like the symbolism like I do.
Yeah. What are people, is this on the increase that more people are getting pierced than ever before? Is it kind of the same? Or are more people having more, I don't know what word to use, daring piercings? Like, are more people having more genital piercings, more intimate piercings?
I wouldn't say it's on the increase. Mm. Genital piercing itself, it kind of stays the same. You know, it's and the reason for it is it's not so much about the sensationalism behind it. Genital piercings for the most are functional.
Yeah.
If they're done correctly, obviously. And
so functional being that they increase pleasure, yeah, they increase awareness and connection to your genitals.
Yeah, as you age, you want to explore your body more.
Mm.
And so you'll find the genital piercing sort of category would start from about the age of 25, I would say. That's when most people start coming in. 25 all the way up until, I think my oldest client is 82.
Wow.
Cool.
You know? And I mean, he's got a 12 millimeter thick Prince Albert.
Wow.
You know?
I'm pretty sure he told me he doesn't even really have sex anymore. Mm. He just loves having his ring. You know what I mean? So everybody has their reasons.
Yeah.
But as far as the other piercings go, it's more of a, I'm not going to lie, a media plays a very big role in it these days, because the more people see what is out there, the more it triggers their mind to go, hey, that would look pretty cool on me, you know, and People, especially people who have, I suppose, commitment issues to tattoos and that, would rather go for the piercings because if they don't like it, you can take it out. Yeah. It leaves a tiny little scar. Yes, it does. But, you know, it's part of their process, you know.
In terms of genital piercing, more men or women? What kind
of? It's quite even now, hey? Yeah. In the beginning, I'd say when my mentor started out, it was mostly gay men. Mm. They were the more adventurous at the time. And then lesbians started getting it, and then it kind of evened out a bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, heterosexuals started getting it, and now it's just everybody's getting it.
And then it became really mainstream. And a lot of that was media-driven.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, such trendsetters.
A lot of porn stars.
It's all down to information. Mm. The more people started realizing that it wasn't just something to make your genitals look pretty, and that there was actually a functional reason behind it, people are like, oh yeah, who doesn't want more pleasure? You know, that's the driving force at the moment, is people are seeking pleasure.
Mm. Yeah. It's a fascinating world. And the extension of that becomes the body modification, which is its own world of literally endless possibilities. And people are going to incredible extremes in that. We were talking before, I saw some video clips of a woman who is in an incredibly submissive dominant relationship that was a lifestyle relationship. And she actually had the hood of her clit split.
Yeah.
To give her master like more access to her clit. And she had her inner lips of her yoni altered simply because, not out of a beauty thing, that he wanted that done for his pleasure, his purpose.
Yeah. I mean, it's very difficult to understand it if you obviously don't have that, you know, fetish.
Yeah.
But the way I see it, as far as modification goes, the difference between modification and mutilation is that mutilation usually is done to take something away from you, whereas modification is done to enhance who you believe you are. You know what I mean? It's actually an empowering thing. Whether or not you're in a dominant or submissive relationship or whatever. And that's kind of where I draw my ethical line. You know what I mean? I'm more than willing to help people who are using it to empower themselves. But if you were to come to me and go, I don't think this pinky needs to be there, I'm not going to help you remove your pinky. You know what I mean? Just because you feel it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I do get requests like that. And I have to turn people away because there is definitely something psychologically they have to go assess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, there is that. There is a very fine line, I'm sure, between, you know, distinguishing between the two. And again, like I was saying, in our country, I mean, I actually lived next to a doctor a while ago. He's originally from the UK. And he said to me, you know what, Shayna, this country is, like, it's amazing. You don't understand the kind of people I get to work with every day. He says, I've seen the strangest things. I mean, I get, you know, people from, you know, sort of the local, you know, places down the road that come to me and say, you know what, I actually don't want my fingers on my toes because, you know, it's part of my tribe. Mm. And as a doctor, that's completely the opposite of what you do.
Exactly.
So for you and your industry, that's something quite, like you say, there's a very fine line to distinguish when somebody wants to do that because it's, like you say, they're trying to add to who they are or they're taking away from, you know, who they are.
The most extreme I ever saw of that was Fakir Mustafa. I mean, he had his cock split totally, ultimately, you know, bit by bit, and a whole lot of other really bizarre, I think his tongue as well.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can do, you know, as far as the penis goes, because everything is, I suppose, much larger than female genitalia, it's easier to do these procedures on. But as long as you don't harm the corpus cavernosum, which are the blood chambers, which enable you to have an erection, your penis will still work. You know, there are guys who don't want to ejaculate from the front of their penis, but rather from the base. So they will have a sub-incision done where they split the urethra open further down. I mean, like I said, it's not for me to judge.
Is that a pleasurable thing that they would do that
some,
as well?
For some people it is. It's whether it's a psychological pleasure or a physical pleasure. I mean, there are guys who are into urethral masturbation where they use sounding kits and that. And, you know, it's
not only men, for women as well.
For women as well,
Because for a lot of women, it actually becomes quite interesting G-spot stimulation.
Yeah.
Because the urethral tube runs just across the top of where the G-spot is.
Exactly.
So often gives intense pleasure.
Yeah. So there is so many things you can do. But like I said before, my ethical line is about keeping things functional. You know what I mean? So, you know, as long as I feel I'm helping a person.
So we can't send certain politicians to you to get their tongue sorted out.
No. I'll split it, but I'm not.
So, Jonty, I think this is a good time for me to jump in with the safety aspect, if that's cool. So, obviously, my agenda is always about HIV and STI awareness and safety, working for Health for Men as I do. And basically, I think, and Conrad, you'll be able to back me up on this, is there's, if you have piercings, if you want to get tattoos and things, you can have and enjoy safer sex with these things very easily. You just need to consider a few things, which is to say that if you've got a fresh piercing, or first of all, the genitals are like a whole ecosystem. There are there's bacteria going on in there. There's yeast going for men and for women. So there's all sorts. It's a very delicate balance going on down there. And if you want to have things pierced, or you're introducing metals or different things, you need to consider what's going on, and also what you use to clean the wounds. And and it's something that Conrad and I were talking about earlier on, is that if you want to get a piercing as a guy, you want to get a Prince Albert, generally the findings are that the thicker...
You need to go back one step. We need to interrupt.
Yes.
Because for a lot of people, they would have no clue what a Prince Albert is.
Okay.
So. Talking about that, it was funny. Sorry. You were talking about a Prince Albert. Now, yesterday, Yanev, which is obviously my boyfriend or business partner, Mr. Drizzle, whatever you want to call him, he was saying, you know, babe...
Mr. Drizzle is not a fantastic title.
It's
especially
not,
like
is
in
it?
The world of sexuality.
It really
we need
isn't.
To do a whole lot better than that.
It really isn't. But he was saying to me yesterday, so what do you call, obviously, you know, a penis with a piercing? And I was like, it's a prince. Is it Harry? And he just had a huge laugh. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's an Albert.
That's only
it's
if you've got ginger Albert. Pubes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So Conrad. Sorry,
well, you can call the penis whatever you want to. Exactly. The piercing is called a Prince Albert.
Yeah. So explain a Prince Albert, please.
Okay. So basically what a Prince Albert is a piercing that basically it goes through the eye of the urethra, through the front opening.
So that's mean where wee comes out.
Yeah. Yep. And it basically exits... right between where the head, the glands, meets the shaft. So, I don't know, well, to explain to most guys or women who have seen a lot of penises, where the frenulum is, the center skin at the bottom of the head.
So that's where the head and the shaft meet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's where it meets. It almost forms kind of like a little triangle. And basically that we call the sweet spot, where you go through the right in the middle between there. And the reason why that's the best place to do it is because it's against the frenulum, which is the sensitive spot. And also that is where your urethra is the thinnest. Pretty much. So your piercing will heal a lot faster.
Mm.
So-called Prince Albert, because apparently he was the first person. Well, no, he wasn't the
first publicized person.
He definitely was not the first.
Yeah.
So he was Queen Victoria's husband, partner, whatever he was called.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he had like a chain going to the outside of his trousers to the ring.
Well, that's the story to keep his penis against his leg because they wore tights during that era. So
why would his penis not be against his leg?
Well, so it wasn't, so it wouldn't kind of, so it couldn't get an erection to the occasion.
Oh,
so it wasn't sticking out. It was all tucked away.
It was functional.
In my opinion, I think they would belong to the BDSM scene.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And then a piercing, before you carry on, Lucy, a piercing that's right through the head.
Right through the head. What's horizontally is called an amplang.
Mm-hmm.
That is a tribal piercing from, I think it's kind of East Asia.
But that also goes through the urethra?
There's two ways you can do it. The North American way of doing it is above the urethra. The
North American as in kind of modern North American piercing, not traditional.
But in recent times, it's been found that it heals a lot faster if it goes transurethrally, which basically it kind of separates the piercing into two shorter piercings. Mm. And what a lot of people don't understand about genital piercings, especially the ones that involve the urethra, is that your urine, if you are healthy, your kidneys, there's no bladder infection or anything, is quite sterile to your own body. So the more you urinate, it actually cleans the piercing for you. It irrigates it, which is why genital piercings actually heal a lot faster than the ones that involve the urethra. They heal a lot faster than any other piercings. So that's the amplang.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there's a vertical version called an apodravia. Now, the apodravia is basically, it's a Prince Albert and a reverse Prince Albert at the top that is connected with one solid bar. But it can be done.
I'm trying to picture that. I don't know that I've ever seen that.
So it's just a vertical version of the amplang.
I know what you mean.
Okay. That piercing, historically, I believe it's mentioned in the Kama Sutra, but it actually goes even further back because they found Bushman cave paintings where they have over-accentuated penises and what looks like porcupine quills going through it in the cave paintings.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
And I mean, that's probably quite a long time ago, you know, before civilization, as we would say. So, you know, it's like I say, it's always been a part of it. There's always been these rites of passage, you know. So, you know, it's hard to even say. There's a word that defines all of this called modern primitive. And basically it's taking practices that were used in primitive times and on almost modernizing them, making them more sterile, more safe, you know, finding better ways of keeping that practice yet with the information we have of today.
Yeah. I think there's a guy called Hoos Grandel made the most amazing modern primitive photography book.
Mm-hmm.
I think his name. Anyway. So carry on, Brucey, before we interrupted you.
No, not at all. So basically, it was just you have to consider yourself. If yourself or your partner has a new piercing, that it's a very susceptible to infection. So you just wash your hands before playing with each other. And there's absolutely no reason that you can't have amazing, safer sex with incredible sensation. Because generally, most piercings will not interfere with a condom and water-based lube. You should be A for away. Everything's all good. And generally, and what Conrad and I were discussing earlier on is that if you are going to go for a piercing as a guy, if you're getting a Prince Albert or one of these different things, going for a thicker girth of piercing is actually better. It's safer.
It's more comfortable.
More comfortable, and there's less chances of micro tearing and ripping and that kind of thing because there's more surface area.
There's actually less chance of it ripping a condom as well.
Yeah.
Because the thicker it is, the edges will be rounder, that type of thing. And it's important to touch on that it needs to be done with really well-made jewelry. high quality.
So you kind of get what you pay for.
Yeah, yes. if you're going to go buy a cheaper piece of jewelry that is all edgy and stuff, that condom's not going to last.
Yeah.
You know. But another important thing with regards to piercing itself is that you must remember, if you're going to get a genital piercing, the more downtime you can give that piercing, the better. Okay, because if you get a fresh piercing and you're going to go have sex the same day, firstly, it's going to be very uncomfortable for you.
Very,
Secondly, a fresh wound is kind of very weak. So it could split in any direction if you injure it. Okay, so there is a certain amount of time I would ask
what
you.
What would be the time period?
I usually say a downtime of about 2 weeks, just to establish it enough. And most people don't want to have sex during that time. You know, because it is very sensitive still.
An average healing time for most male genital piercing?
A Prince Albert, you're looking at about anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks before it actually starts, the natural discharge from the piercing starts slowing down. We call them the crusties and everything. But wonderful, the piercing itself is not completely healed. Okay, it enters its second stage of healing, where basically the scar tissue tunnel starts thickening up, type of a thing, and then that is when it is truly a mature piercing, is when there is no real discharge from the piercing. Now that discharge, I know most people look at it and they're like, oh no, it's pus and everything. It's not quite the case. I mean, the discharge is made up of, you know, sebum, skin oils, you know.
Just the same as any wound would heal, in a way.
Exactly.
And average time that a clit piercing takes to heal?
Those take about 4 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that longer than a male's?
Just because the urine flow is not coming into contact with it directly.
Okay.
Yes, when a female urinates, it does kind of engulf the entire area, but not in the way
than a male's
that
does,
a Prince Albert would. Look, there are male genital piercings that do take longer, like things like the ampelang, and that it's basically because of the amount of tissue it travels through. The longer you're piercing, the longer it's going to take to heal.
Yeah,
I think
you'd
also have to wait a little bit longer. If you want to have unprotected anal sex with your partner and you have a piercing, I would suggest you wait longer than 2 weeks. Make sure that there's as much healing going on as possible, because there is a risk.
There's a lot of bacteria.
A lot of bacteria going on up there.
And for genital piercings, in terms of like substances that you could use to clean that, because I know with me, like earrings, you know, tongue ring, that sort of thing. I mean, I'm the kind of person that wants things to heal quite quickly. So, I mean,
have you got
you
a tongue ring?
I do.
Show me.
It's up at the moment. It's just a hole there. Because obviously I'm teaching, or being a singing teacher, I never thought it was too professional having these little 8-year-olds seeing this beautiful purple thing flying around my mouth all the time.
It would make for interesting conversation when they went home.
I mean, I had some students going, oh my word, what is that? That's so cool.
Isn't
and then I've got to explain to their mother, you know, oh, well, as a singing teacher, your child should, you know, should get a tongue ring, because it makes for great stage presence. I'm quite lucky, though, to talk about my tongue ring. I mean, I know most people, they can take it out and within 24 hours, 48 hours, it closes. Mine,
the
I've
science
left out,
behind that is basically, it all depends on how thick the piercing was and whether or not the piercing is completely healed. If you have a piercing that is completely healed, it almost never will fuse itself. It just shrinks and it basically gets clogged with sebum, okay, and dead skin cells. A lot of the time people come into the studio and they're like, no, this one's closed and everything. And I'll take one look and I'm like, no, it's still open.
It's not.
And they're like, no, but I can't get my jewelry in. I'm like, yes, of course you can't get your jewelry in. It's thicker than what it is now. So usually we just clean the piercing out, we stretch it up, and we put the jewelry back in. It takes about a week or so to settle down, and they have their piercing back.
I thought, okay, well, maybe my body doesn't heal well, because I can leave mine out for 6 weeks and it'll still go through.
That's because you had it for quite a long time before you first took it out. So the piercing had established itself quite well.
Yeah.
You see, and also another thing that happens with the tongue is it all depends on, like I say, how thick you pierce it in that. Even if you pierce it very thin at 1.6 millimeters, what happens is with a lot of movement of the tongue and moving the jewelry or playing with the jewelry, you're actually over time stretching and cutting the piercing bigger to the point where it creates more scar tissue, so that when it does start shrinking, it will only shrink to a certain point.
Okay.
And then it becomes too rigid for the skin to actually shrink more.
To close properly,
So my advice is to anybody who thinks that their piercings are closed, if you had them for, I'd say, longer than a year with no issues whatsoever, I don't believe that piercing is closed. Mm. If the piercing was injured when you took it out and it was scratched or you injured in some way, then it may fuse a bit. But a lot of the time we can get jewelry back in there.
Yeah. Mm.
What started your journey into this?
My journey into this was quite interesting. I would say it started when I was 3 years mm-hmm. old. I remember standing next to my mom in a bank line. And back then, you know, it was still kind of old South Africa.
Yeah.
So the security guard in the bank was one of those tribal men with the big stretched earlobes.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, I didn't say anything to anyone. I just remember being fascinated by it. And within myself, I knew that when I was older, I was going to do that. You know, so, you know, you keep getting exposed to these things. Mm. I watched a lot of National Geographic shows in that growing up. And I always felt this need within myself to express myself in that way.
It's amazing. You know, when I look, because I hear the most amazing stories from people and I get to spend time with phenomenal people. And it's incredible how the paths that we choose are so much a part of us almost from the moment we're born in a way.
Yeah. The believe it or not, you know, as I was growing up, the focus was more on me expressing things physically with my own body. But as I started working as a body artist, I started realizing it was teaching me something greater about myself.
Mm.
And that was that it wasn't about me, that I was a natural healer.
Mm.
And, you know, as I started helping people more to express who they were, I realized that that was my true vocation, which was to be a healer. And, you know, it's I suppose it's evident in the way I run my studio is that I will always give people the time to explain to me what it is they want to achieve.
Mm.
And I will find a way through what I do to get them there.
Yeah. And we've spoken so much about this over time, Tamar, is how many ways there are of healing in the context and the space you come from. The intention and purpose creates the most amazing experiences. Without it often being kind of an intentional healing space in a way.
True that. And interesting enough, you know, people have a certain opinion about what is body art, who are the people that go to express themselves through this amazing modern primitive, or how Conrad said so beautifully. And, you know, to express yourself authentically and genuinely is something that is so, so precious. And some people feel it in their body, in their core, in their understanding that they need to go through a physical journey to actually unlock themselves, their creativity, or their sensuality even.
Yeah.
And they find releasing pain, and they find, as Conrad said in the last show, something beyond the pain. You know, you actually learn to get to know your body. Then I think I can speak to Conrad much easier, even though he will blush maybe, about anal sex. Because he will not say, okay, you know, people say, but it hurts. I said, okay, let it. Don't do it forcefully. Do it with the right lube. Do it in the right
And if it hurts, you're not doing it right anyway.
Exactly. But there is some pain. There is some pain involved. And that's not a bad thing necessarily.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it comes back to think about the conversations that we've had with Galen first, with so many other people. And even the work that I do in so much, it's really about that being authentic in terms of who you are and exploring and expressing that in so many amazing ways.
But also having the space to do it in, a safe space to do it in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think a lot of our clients actually understand why they come there sometimes because they not even come in there for a piercing. They just find themselves there just wanting to talk. And
I get the same thing, that people make an appointment to see me, and I'm not sure why I'm here. So let's talk and let's see kind of where we go with something. And then a journey begins to emerge.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, that something draws us to – There's something.
So cool. Yeah.
And
so cool. The people will know they need some sort of healing. They don't know what it is, but they go for it anyway. I admire that.
And
it starts with a safe place. We have a little thing we say at our studio, like with my other pieces, and that is our happy place. Mm. Because it doesn't matter how bad our day is or whatever, the minute we sit down behind that client and start helping them, it's so amazing how it just lifts us, you know, as people. And, you know, it kind of realigns us to remember that it doesn't matter what the hardships are, we can rise above all of it, you know. And it only takes maybe shifting the focus from yourself to someone else. Yeah.
Well, there's a very big difference between kind of the stuff of life and the story of life and the purpose of life.
Yeah.
And I know for me, my healing space is my meditation space. It's my reconnection space. For me, it's one of the deepest spaces in my life.
Yeah.
Regardless of what's happening outside.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
In the stuff of the world.
Yeah.
I was going to say as well, I mean, when it was actually perfect timing that you said the space in which you allow people to experiment with stuff like that. And I think that's almost the most important thing when it comes to all sorts of things like piercing and body modification and jewelry, because, you know, it's so unpleasant being in a space where, for example, somebody that's, you know, almost trying to help you get this piercing or this tattoo is putting... You know, they don't give you that patience. And that's something also just from speaking to you and just everyone in the studio, that you have that patience and you have that heart space that you actually give to someone else and say, you know what, if it's going to take you half an hour to make that decision, that's fine. But I'm here with you every step of the way, and you can truly offer that person their space to have their own anxiety and help, you know, obviously help them move past that. Because there's nothing worse than, like I said, feeling under pressure, especially in those environments. Because, I mean, I remember when I was doing one of my tattoos, I almost felt, you know, I'd say to her, look, is it straight? Is it this? And she would say, yeah, no, but it's fine. And so I felt under pressure, and I thought,
rushed.
I felt rushed, and I thought, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that, because this is going to be on me forever. And had that person created a safe space and offered me her heart space and her time for a little while, she probably would have gotten a lot out of me, you know. You can actually probably allow people to open their boundaries. Yeah. And like you say, you end up having people that come back to your studio and saying, well, I'm not exactly sure why I'm here, but I'm willing to try this time, or I'd like to try that. So you're creating an opportunity for them to grow and experiment with all the other things.
That's the difference between people who get the deeper space.
Yeah.
And the fact that the process that we're working with, so whether it's my work, whether it's your work, that's just a vehicle for so much else to come through. And that's just the way somebody in that moment chooses to express themselves or to explore themselves or to heal themselves.
Yeah. That's
simply the vehicle that we're using.
Exactly.
And you've got yours and I got mine, and there's no real difference in them other than their physical expression.
Exactly. We ourselves cannot heal someone.
No.
We can only offer them the support to show them that they are strong enough to heal themselves.
That's all.
You know, and that's what we do. We're facilitators.
Yeah. And the more we get that, the more we just create the space, and you will have whatever experience you're going to have.
Exactly.
And with enough consciousness, you will get the lessons, the learning, the growth.
And in
that.
Being true to who we are as healers, we are almost healing ourselves as well.
Totally. So a long time ago, I read something, and I come back to it again and again. It's one of my favorite stories by a guy called Anthony de Mello. He was a Jesuit priest, a phenomenal man, wrote the most amazing book called The Way to Love. So go find the book, everybody, The Way to Love, phenomenal. And one of the pieces that he wrote about was the idea of selfishness. And he says, essentially, we've been brought up with the idea that selfish is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that everything that we do, we get something from.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter how charitable we are. It doesn't matter how giving we are getting something from that. So when we start looking at that, a lot of what you do in life changes.
Yeah.
Because you start looking at, why are you in that space?
Exactly.
And as much as I'm there for my clients, I'm there for me.
Yes.
And then your space becomes the most amazing and incredible space of learning, of growth, of exploration. And I know for me, I look at some of the stuff that I've been through in the past months with just a heart that's never been more open. And the learning that comes from that is incredible.
It's about being courageous enough to have an open heart so that others will find courage to open their hearts.
Yeah, and that's what you do because, and I struggled with that for a long time. I struggled with the idea of, so here I am, this teacher, and I was never comfortable with kind of the, I don't know what word to use, other than sort of the guru status that certain people put on. And I was never comfortable with that. But how to be in that space and to be this vulnerable person. And it was just allowing defenses to drop and being really human in all of those spaces and being very vulnerable in all of those spaces that started to shift that. And I have to tell you, the heart journey is not for the faint-hearted.
It's not.
No.
Fuck, you're going to go into that space. That is for the warriors. That's it. You want to go into that space, you be a warrior or you do not go there.
Yeah, that's it. I think there's a huge misconception in the world, and it's probably pushed by the media that love is easy. Jesus. And self-love is probably one of the hardest things you'll
love
ever try to.
Love is the hardest journey. When you go deeply into your heart, that is, I don't know of any journey that will take you to places like that will.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, as my work moves more into a heart-centered sexuality, that we start more and more using heart as the entry point rather than genitals as the entry point. And I just look at my own journey and learnings and experiences. Nothing will take you to the depths that love will. And the sad thing is that so few of us will allow ourselves the depth of love.
It's because of fear.
We will
fear the unknown.
Yeah. We'll scratch the surface of it. And we live lives of mediocrity and boring relationships. And, you know, so I'm giving a talk on Tuesday night called Exploring Your Sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two things about it that are important. And I wrote something saying, this talk is for everybody. And then I realized it's not. Because if you want to have boring sex, it's not for you. If you want to have a mediocre relationship, it's not for you. If you want more, then it is.
Yeah.
And there was an interesting thing that came up this morning. A lot of questions come up lately about sexual freedom. And it's a big topic that we talk about lots. Mm. And it's something that we're going to talk a lot about on Tuesday night, is what does that actually mean? And it was an interesting thing because a lot of people think, okay, so now I'm sexually free. I can go and do anything in the world. So I'm going to fuck whoever I want. I can go and have all of these orgies and bondage experience, and I can go and do everything. And it actually is really far from there.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you're free just because you've decided you can go and do all these things.
It actually, and the more I thought about it, the more I came to, it actually means that you know where you're making your choices from.
Because some of those things are trappings.
Are you making fear-based choices? Are you making heart-based choices? Are you making choices out of somebody else's expectation or thought of who you should be? Instead of saying, wait a minute, who am I? And getting back to that authenticity.
And I also think, you know, a lot of people think, as you were talking about this, the selfishness. Unfortunately, with certain parts, you in order to think of the I and to really learn, like you say, to love yourself first to better offer that to other people, because like you say, then it just becomes, you know, an expression of, okay, well, maybe I'm going to try these things to see if I can please somebody else. But unless it's coming from, you say, the internal space, you're never going to offer that same freedom to yourself or to anyone else around you.
And if you can't give it to yourself and really know that, then you are never going to be able to do it with anybody else first. And I think...
Well, how can you truly know you love someone until you know who that person is?
Yeah. And I think in our world...
Or who you are.
Yeah. If there's one thing in this world that we can teach our children... It is to love themselves. And if we do that, we are educating them for life.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind. The rest of it's information. They can find that anywhere. Teach them to love themselves. But, you know, it's very interesting what you said about knowing yourself. And we get trapped by answers. And there was something beautiful that somebody said. And I watch old TV shows, especially when I'm writing. And I've been rewatching Ally McBeal. But there are some phenomenal lines in there. And there were two this week that struck me. The first one was, how can you care so much for somebody within a few minutes of meeting them? And the response was, it saves time.
What a beautiful line.
It's amazing.
Nice, eh?
Care for somebody. Fuck. Just give it. There's it. And the other one was, you think you have all the answers. How do you know they're the right ones?
True.
And I talk a lot about staying in the question rather than
finding the answer.
Yeah. Because as soon as we find an answer, we think that's it. And then we stay there. Yes. Instead of saying, wait a minute, there's this world of possibilities. And there's so much more to explore.
I once read a statement. Sorry, you were saying somebody once said, it was actually in a beautiful book by Neil Donald Walsh. Mm-hmm. And he says there, what happens if everything you ever thought was right was actually wrong, and everything you thought was wrong was actually right?
Absolutely.
And I was like, wow.
Just turn it all upside down.
That is mind-blowing.
Because when you look at the world, you know, it becomes so different.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's so much about this. And it really is. Last Friday afternoon, I was watching Men in Black 3. Now, I don't know if I've ever seen it before. And I'm always willing to be totally offbeat and wrong. But if I'd seen it before, I didn't remember it. But you know what I got from it? It's the most amazing story and lesson in alternate realities, in parallel realities, in lives that are happening at the same time, in virtuality and reality. And I thought, this is amazing.
Now, Jonty actually sent me a WhatsApp.
Saying.
Friday afternoon saying, I have just watched the most amazing movie, Men in Black 3.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, because it's a cuck movie for what it is.
Exactly.
But what it says is really
the message
incredible.
Behind it.
Yeah.
So you see Doctor Strange for the same reason.
I'm going to. So anybody who wants to come to the talk on Tuesday night, there is space, and it is on our page on the Cliff Central website. It is up there, and it's also on Facebook, and it's about exploring your sexuality. Talk a little bit of a workshop. Really, really interesting. On Thursday, the 1st of December, we're doing the last water massage for the year. And Casper has a really interesting and cool guest. Mr. Andre, how are you, sir? Very cool. So let's go back to Unoterpsia, and you guys are all going to love this. So Unoterpsia, the idea that pursuing sexual pleasure is the meaning of life.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Is that not the most beautiful thing? After we thought it was, you know, something to do with terps.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
See, your minds are just all in the gutter.
That's so beautiful. You've
got to elevate things.
Isn't it where it's supposed to be? Isn't it supposed to be there?
Yes, absolutely. We love that because all of our friends are
in the gutter, yeah.
So that's really, really cool.
They say that it's good to end up in the gutter sometimes because it has the best view of the stars.
Very cool. So this has been really fascinating, guys. Thank you all very much for being here.
Thanks for having
and
us.
Yeah,
it's awesome. You know, I was thinking about how amazing this Friday morning space is. I get to spend it with friends. I get to spend it with the most phenomenal and fascinating people. And it really is. It's incredible.
You know, I think just from my experience of being here today, just how everyone's sitting in the studio, as much as we all, you know, we do all each have our own jobs. I mean, I design jewelry, you do your piercings. But I feel like this group of people sitting in here really does come from, I suppose, a heart space, which is so important because it's more than just the aesthetics. It's more than just the jewelry design. It's more than just the piercing that you offer that person. I feel like everyone sitting here is really just trying to create space for other people to get to know who they are while teaching us who we are at the same time, which is so amazing. Because when I heard of the topic, I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. But like, you know, you want to always move beyond the aesthetics.
That's what we do. So very quickly, tell us about the jewelry. Because I thought this was just the most beautiful thing at Sexpo.
Thank you. Well, look, like as I said,
I'll do it quickly.
Our company is Drizzle Jewelry. We have a beautiful online shop. And like I said, we just want to create the space where women can actually start experimenting with non-piercing jewelry. But really sort of like, again, adorning the woman's body, and just allowing them to, experiment with, like you say, nipple piercings, that sort of stuff, without having for it to be so permanent. So as somebody so beautifully put it, it's almost like the gateway to, I think, what Conrad would do, but in a very sensual and elegant way.
Beautiful. So the website is?
It's drizzle.co.za. Cool. You can shop online. We've got beautiful Christmas gift baskets and all sorts of essential goodies coming up. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Cool. Conrad, contact details.
Contact details. You can go to our website. It's www.beyondthepain.co.za. We're on Facebook, Instagram, everything. Cool. So, yeah, just search that. And, yeah, basically, if you guys are ever interested in body piercing, you know, my space is open. You don't have to come there and get a piercing, even if you just want to talk about it, if you're fascinated, you want to learn things. The website is very informative in that way. I designed it to teach people more about what they would get themselves into.
And we did say next time that we have you here, we are going to do a live piercing.
Yeah, why not?
Depending on what that is, maybe.
That'll be amazing.
So we've already decided what it is.
What is it?
It's going to be a clitoris piercing.
Okay. Woo. All right,
or,
Will, we'll
or a lip piercing.
I express my desire to do that.
So, okay, there we go.
So, because that's what we do here. So, thank you all. It's been really beautiful to share with you. Tomorrow, have a wonderful weekend, a good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos to you guys. Jesus, now, you know, speaking all these things, you say good Shabbos to me.
Well, it's all the wonderful spectrum of being human. And in this, my new word is surreality that we live in. So it really is beautiful. I wish you all so much pleasure. Next up is Casper and the team. And again, so much pleasure to everybody. CliffCentral.com.